From Calvary Church of Santa Ana, this is the Calvary Life Podcast, the show where we share stories, tell jokes, and have discussions about faith, life, and God with people from Calvary Church. Here are your hosts, Eric and Matt.
All right. Welcome. This is our Calvary Church podcast, and we are here with a very, very special guest.
That's right. It's a surprise guest, so why don't you go ahead and give us a little bit, and we'll try and guess who you are.
Oh, the laugh gives it away right away.
Yeah. Give you a little bit. Let's see.
That's like, good enough.
Just kidding. Yeah.
You can text your guesses too.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like my parents used to listen to this radio program where they would make a sound and they had to guess. And like the person that won the grand prize, which is like a cruise around the world or something, was somebody scraping toast.
So, that's amazing.
Yeah, pretty cool. But we're not playing that game. This is just done on my voice.
That's right. So hopefully you've guessed by now. And we are here with Noah Elias. He's a member of Calvary Church. And that's what we're doing here. We're talking with people who go to Calvary Church or part of our family and just get a sense of what's life like for them as someone in the workplace or wherever they're at. And Noah is an artist, entrepreneur, author, speaker, mentor, does some work with Disney as well as his own stuff. And so we're excited to hear a little bit more about that. But would you first maybe just let us in a little bit of your Calvary origin story? Like, how'd you end up here at Calvary Church?
13. My parents split up at 9, but then my mom came back down here to Southern California and lived in Newport Beach and Corona Del Mar. And we would commute from Corona Del Mar to Calvary Church. And it's interesting because back then when I came down to live with her, I was brought up to the youth group up at Calvary. And back then it was like Ray and Lyle. And when you're in a pretty crazy environment, you know, with a family environment like that, or going through a lot of transitions, and like, especially me just coming down to Southern California, I got to the beach and then I came to Calvary. I'm like, dude, there's so much going on. So I was fired up from the standpoint of, it just felt really hopeful. It was fun. There was, and I've always been this way in my life. Like, I just love things to look forward to. So like, it was the door. If it was Arizona Outreach, if it was going skiing at Brian Head or going to Hume or whatever, it's like, dude, it was just so nice in the midst of chaos to have something to look forward to. So my family became Calvary. So,
and that half hour commute felt like nothing then.
Nothing.
All right.
No, and what was really crazy was in halfway through my high school year, I came up to Tustin and we started living up here in Tustin, Santa Ana, moved around. We moved like once, twice a year for like 30 years. So a lot of houses. But during junior high and going into high school, as soon as I would get out of school, I just could not wait to get to Calvary. We would literally leave Calvary, or we'd leave school, get out of school, go straight to Del Taco, then go straight to Ray or Lyle's office. And we would just camp out. Then we started doing worship music here at the church.
What'd you do? What'd you play?
Play drums.
Nice.
So play drums. Then we actually formed a band. Then we actually became a Christian band that toured and started going around the country at 16. And that was a lot of fun. So Calvary for me was like a haven, like a very solid, fun place, and became very family oriented with the group of kids that we were running with and also the leaders. But the leaders were literally like our parents. So our youth pastors were like, they were it for me. Those guys became my dad.
Wow. So when you were a teenager or something like that, when you started getting more into art and maybe kind of seeing how that played into even a career potentially, right? Or something to make money with.
Yeah. Maybe even originally an outlet.
Yeah. So what was funny, I would be the one doodling, you know, during sermons, you know, sitting in the chapel up in the, you know, up in the balcony, and I was always drawing, but then I started doing all the flyers for like the door and pretty much for everything at Calvary.
Yeah.
All the signs and graphic design. This was before computers were around. So I was doing everything by hand, but I started my business at 16 on a bike, going door to door selling art. Did a lot down in Newport Beach, did a lot in Tustin, and just would walk in and say, hey, do you need a new sign? Or, you know, bagels, 50 cents, you know, for a new topping or whatever. And I would just literally just hustle. And they'd be like, hey, that turned out really, really good. My buddy who runs a limo company, he needs a sign for Sunday brunch over at this restaurant. And it just became rapport because you didn't, or referral, I should say, because you didn't, back then, you didn't have social media. So it was, if you wanted to do an art show, you'd hope everybody would show up. If you want to market your business, you had to go talk to people. So it was the art of people at 16 through my 20s was all about building the business back then.
That's cool. That makes a lot of sense. The art of business. I like that. Mm-hmm. And just even of connecting relationally with people. And
that was it, dude. It was all about building relational equity with people. And at a very young age, I realized if you don't take care of people, your relationship and your integrity and the ripple effect of your integrity is absolutely everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially even now with social media, because back then, it was my grandfathers and the mentors that I ran with and still run with that go to Calvary. It was the smallest things. Bring a pen to a meeting.
Yeah.
Show up and look people in the eye. And when you do business, don't hide behind text and email. Meet people face to face. If you have an opportunity, drive an hour or two and sit with people. And that's how business was done, old school. You know, like my grandfathers were always like, meet him for coffee. You know, go do stuff face to face because building relational equity is everything. And if you're building and depositing into people, like in a bank account, you're either going to be taking withdrawals from people or depositing into people. And so they taught me that at a very young age. And so I just wanted to spend my life, I was looking at the other people that were failing around me or people going to school and thinking, hey, if I got a piece of paper, then I'm going to have it made. Well, I'm like, you got a $100,000 piece of paper and you have no relational equity. Right. I don't care how great of an artist you are.
So somewhere along the way, you learned how to leverage this God-given artistic ability that's led you into some really cool venues. So like, give us a sense of some of the people, companies that you've worked with. But then even beyond that, how have you leveraged that for your calling? You've talked a lot about calling and what God has done with that.
Yeah. So kind of had a midlife crisis at 28.
A little early?
Yeah. But I'd already been doing it. I was since 16, so you're kind of at a burnout phase at that, you know, when you're pushing that hard.
Yeah.
And I was pushing it hard at that age because I realized there's nobody going to take care of me. Mm. So when you're in survival mode like that, your mom's in bed, your dad's gone, you're like, yeah. And I've had to pretty much reconcile my whole life. Not really having to depend on the Lord, like learning how to rest and get more done with rest and knowing that the Lord's going to take care of everything because, you know, he fills in all the blanks and I just got to show up. But back when you're a kid, you're like, oh, no, I need to show up. I need to do everything. I need to spin all plates and wear all hats and then provide. And then you get a family and you're like, oh, man, now I got people relying on me. You know, it's easy for me to live in a warehouse and not have to, you know, I can go eat wherever I want. Don't have to rely on any people. And I can just live in this warehouse. And
it's kind of scrappy.
It's really scrappy. But then the moment you have responsibility, your survival instinct is like heightened that much more. And dependability upon the Lord was something that took a long time of discipline to realize. Dude, just seek him first. Everything else will be taken care of. And that took a long time to learn. So with my art, I had to go, okay, I'm not going to school. I'm not going to go to college. I'm not going to have this, you know, sophisticated training that everybody else does to become a successful, forget just a craftsman.
Right.
You know, there's the craft of what you do, but then there's the whole, how do you make a business out of this thing? Mm-hmm. So I'm having to do both at once.
Yep.
And so when I started building the company, I started realizing at 28 with that midlife crisis, I was sitting above Corona Del Mar Beach and I went down there to have a quiet time one night, super late. And I'll never forget. I mean, I remember it super, super vivid. Crying my eyes out, super upset, overwhelmed, mad, feeling like I've been blessed. You know, most would call it a curse. I looked at it as a blessing of being able to create anything, but having no idea what I was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, man, I can paint flowers. I can paint, you know, still lifes. I can paint abstract. I can paint cartoons. I can do anything. But not in a cocky way, but it was more of like, God, you've given me this ability to paint, but what's my niche? Am I going to be like Weiland and the guy that paints whales for the rest of my life? Am I going to be like Kincaid and paint cottages for the rest of my life? What's my thing?
Did you ever feel like you were pigeonholed into some sort of thing?
No.
Or at that point?
I felt there was too many options.
Too many options. Okay, that
so
makes sense.
So then, you know, that was one of the main things of wisdom my dad did give me. He's like, your niche is the ability to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
So meet all these different great people and all these different lifestyles because you get to meet them on, you know, in their world. If I'm painting florals and meeting, you know, people that are into floral work and that sort of nature work, that's great, you know. go to, then I'm at a comic book convention doing stuff like mermaids and fairies and stuff. And that's a whole nother world. Right. But it allowed me to build all these great things. Well, at that time when I had the crisis, though, I was definitely having that. I want to spend the remainder of my life having the greatest act of worship back to God with this gift of creativity. Now, how do I do that? So how do I build a business that isn't a company, but it's a cause? And so that night it was more like the Lord just gave me a download where he goes, I want you to paint your, journal. I go, what does that mean? And he goes, just take the pages and I want you to do paintings that look like what those words mean.
Wow.
And so I went back to the studio. I closed down everything, kind of just went into this like hole and I'm getting ready to do that again, where I just kind of go into this mode of, locking the world out, and I get these really huge oversized canvases, maybe 6 feet long or whatever. And I just said, I'm just going to paint angels in a way though, that was something you want to hang in your home, but telling the story of the hurt and the wound and the pain and the overcoming and what God has to say about it all. And that was my journal. I'm like, nobody's going to buy this, but I at least need to get this out of my system. I need to purge this out.
How long is that process that you're locking yourself in?
It was like 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but it's fun. It was like throwing canvases down on the ground and big rollers and splashing in, like, and it's just playing in the sandbox of no rules.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going off. And it's like, you're crying and you're mad and you're just unleashing what's been pent up in your soul. And it's a good thing.
And are you doing that with God? You have a sense that like that's like an act of worship?
100%.
Yeah.
It's literally when there's no critic. There's no inner critic and there's no critic, and you're using your gift to glorify God. That'd be the same thing as just sitting down and pounding drums and playing music or whatever, dancing. But what was crazy is, long story short, I framed all these things and I put it in my gallery that I was living above and just said, I'm going to do this to the nines in excellence. Mm-hmm. Lit the room, the vibe, the smell, the feel. I wanted people to walk in and feel the presence of God of like, I don't care if you buy this. And then I put crazy prices on them. And I also knew that if anybody asked me, what does that mean? It was going to be an on-ramp to the kingdom. So it was a great way to use it as a vehicle, because I believe that paintings truly, like art, literally are portals to the supernatural. Because you're bringing people into a gateway of being able to get exposed to the gospel in a way that like, I hate to sound it, but it's like they're suckered into it. They're like, that is gorgeous. And it's like a mosquito to a, you know, to a
they have to
to
stop.
A light.
They
yeah.
Have to stop
they're
and
like,
look.
Hold on a second. Like, right. What does that mean? So this collector walks in, he pulls in a Lamborghini and he comes walking in. He looks at all of them. He's blown away. He's like, how much are each of these? I'm like, 12 grand each. And he's like, I'll take all of them.
What do you think? Like, what's happening inside you at that moment?
Well, in my mind, it's like one of those Alec Bakefield moments where you're like puking. You know? But
did I price too low or too high?
Yeah, you're like, dang, I should ask for more.
But you're being cool on the outside.
Yeah. So it was one of those God's sense of humor type of things where he's like, you know, first of all, always bring the buyer. I always give you provision in the assignment. And you know, it was really kind of his sense of humor, super funny of his thumbprint on it. And so it's been a lot of that since. So now I just looked at that as from that moment on, including my marriage with Chantel and the kids and everything that we've been doing. I just said, this company and what I've been given the ability to do has to be leveraged for the kingdom. And if people don't get kingdom dust on them, if they come into our world, then I'm missing something. Like, mm-hmm. Whether we're at a Disney event, whether I'm at Comic-Con, whether I'm painting the bottom of a pool for MTV, like, there's got to be that way for them to just get exposed to it. There's something different going on here.
Right.
You know, so that's kind of where it went from there.
And do you think the art world is an area of the world that people tend to ask the question of what does this mean? Maybe more than something else, right?
I think it has a lot to do with the person, meaning like they walk in, they look at me, and they look at the art, and they look at me, and they look at the booth, and they look what's going on, and they're like, what does that mean? You know, because they kind of want, there's something different going on around it, because most artists are doing stuff to get shock value or to kind of like oh, that's rad, or, you know, you got, you know, a little kid holding guns, and it's like this controversial, I call it fast food stuff. They call it iconic and whatever. But I'm just like, you guys go on the easy way out when you could be doing things that really are thought provoking in a way that draws people into a much bigger question about who I am, what am I here for, and how can this art be used as a vehicle to let people know how much God cares about them. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'm doing that overtly, sometimes I'm doing that covertly, and then There's other times where I'm just trying to get as clever. The word clever is probably the most appropriate way to say that I'm trying to cleverly position the gospel in a way that will allow a person that's never heard it before to finally hear it in a way that isn't going to make them think, oh, good grief, that reminds me of just my parents, my upbringing, none of that.
Yeah.
I just want you to encounter the love of God in a way that you're like, wait, that's crazy. And I'm not talking about accommodating them.
Right.
Like we're working on an animation thing called The Kid in Me, which is my own brand and IP and character. And it is an allegory for the kingdom. So it's somewhat like a Narnia idea, but it's very dark, and it's Iron Giant meets Harry Potter meets Stranger Things. So, you know, the idea there is, how can we bring the gospel and let people know about the sacrifices of his son, but doing it through an animation series where kids and parents are going to watch this and go, this was life-giving, this was wholesome, and this was very healthy for our family. But I'm walking away challenged as a human being going, God has a much bigger plan for my life, and he's communicated it through this little kid.
Hmm.
So
you're turning the whole... I mean, I've seen, obviously, the art series of...
The Kid and Me.
The Kid and Me. Mm-hmm. So you're turning that into an animation series.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. That's going to be exciting, I think.
Yeah. And that was...
To see him come to life would be exciting for me, at least, especially if I was you, right?
Yeah. I mean, so I took a career of, you know, to kind of put a bow on the career part of it, took a 30-year career of just saying, am I doing today what I would do if there's $150 million on the table? Mm-hmm. And I think everybody needs to ask themselves that question, believer or non-believer. But for believers, time is of the essence, and we don't know how long we're going to have in life. My dad's death 2 months ago was definitely a reminder of you don't know.
Yeah.
But that said, the sense of urgency of knowing that the window was closing, I had to sit there and go, am I really going as big as I could be going? And so I started living as if I already had 150 to 500 million on the table. And what's really interesting, when you start doing that, things start to change. I started having conversations with people about that amount of money. Started having conversations with people that could make those animations worldwide, and the directors that are Christians, and people that started coming into the world at top A level in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Like, all of that starts to come about. Because I said, I don't want to spend the rest of my life doing anything that is playing small and just kind of settling in. And so everything changed in our career. Then it was like, okay, God wanted me. I thought I was going to, I literally, this will help you understand. I literally thought I was going to die an artist at an easel.
Mm-hmm.
And God had a much bigger plan to say, you started as an artist, I'm going to use that story to help propel you into mentoring creatives, helping you mentor and help people in finding their calling. Yeah. And then we're going to use that to take you to the next level, which is building a much bigger kingdom fund of other companies. And you're going to help organize and architect that. And you're just going to leverage all of it for a much bigger kingdom play. And I'm sitting there going, what are you talking about? And he goes, remember that time when you said you didn't want to go small anymore?
Hmm.
This is the price of admission. This is it. And so now I'm doing today at 47. If you would have told me back when I came into Calvary at 13, would I be doing this stuff? I give God 100% all the credit, but I never would have imagined ever in my wildest dreams that this is what would be going on in my midlife.
Hmm.
So
what sort of, you know, temptations or integrity issues have you had to sort of face along the way? Because I'm sure there's, with this kind of work, you know, comes some certain like temptations to, whether that's financial or otherwise, mm-hmm. right? Like, what has that been a difficult road, or is that?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I live in an upside down economy.
Right.
I'm operating in a kingdom economy, but I'm exposed to people that are in a crazy cultural economy, Hollywood, homes, cars, initiative, things that they're into. Like, it's just, it's completely contrasted. So it's funny when you're in a room, when you're standing with one of the richest people in the world, but I'm one of the richest people in eternity. I'm like, how's this going to work out? You know, I'm glad where I'm standing, but that took a long time to learn because of God's grace through amazing people that showed me, you know, Bob Shank being one of my main mentors that helped me build a life and a biblical worldview to understand what are you investing your time, talent, and treasure in. So being able to make sure that every single day I can either put my time and my talent and my money into a shredder, or I can put it forward and have it waiting in eternity for me. So I'm like, I got to turn every single thing in my life into a performing asset. And some of the temptations there, you know, financial could be one. But the enemy typically is going to try to go, if there's pillars underneath your launching pad and you're launching all these missions, right? He's not going to try and take out your rocket. He's going to try and take out your launching pad.
Mm-hmm.
And not the pad, but like the pillars that are holding it.
Mm.
And typically that's your marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So where I got hammered or would continue to get hammered, it wouldn't be like other women type thing, or infidelity. It would be constant night terrors and constant enemy interference mentally going after, you're going to blow it.
Hmm.
Absolute nightmares and night terrors of those situations actually happening. Mm-hmm. And so there would just be like, I mean, none of that's happening in the exterior.
Right.
But in the mind, there was the battle for like him constantly trying to come in and rob my joy.
Yeah.
And so once I finally did some work on that, finding out that there's three enemies that you fight, changed my whole life: the world, the flesh, and the devil. And they're all working all at the same time.
Hmm.
And the moment that you realize what you're dealing with, then I was able to dismantle the bomb, you know, using scripture, speaking the word out loud.
You have a book. Fear Hunters,
uh-huh.
And you kind of take apart some of that. What are the things that are holding us back? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that's dismantling the fear and shame that stands between you and the life that you're destined to live.
Okay.
And so a lot of that was just the strategy. Like, how do I dismantle the things that are robbing me of me living in my full potential of who God's called me to be? And for most of us, it's fear and shame. And so we don't step out of that because we don't know how. And then once we're free, we don't know what to do with the newfound freedom.
Right.
So the temptations, though, dude, is a can definitely be on the physical, meaning like the literally trying to go after your marriage, your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Then it starts, you know, with yourself. You know, so the enemy's trying to take out the major pillars, because if I can undermine the marriage and I can undermine your personal identity, everything else will crumble. That whole launching pad will tip over. The rockets won't go to their destination. And he tries to go that way. So typically, if you own a bakery, he won't go for the cookies. He'll try to go for the baker.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so would you think, even for a young creative, let's say, that wants to be successful, as you know, in this world, you think it's work on those pillars, maybe even like at the same time or even before you're working on whatever your craft is, right?
What I really try to help creatives with, or any person that I'm mentoring or coaching, is working on them from the inside out. And so most people don't want, they're like, fix me and fix me fast and quick. And no amount of money is going to do that.
Right.
But if you can get a person that's willing to like kind of come into the operating room and say, all right, I'm cool with being cut open.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to pull everything inside of you out. And that way you can get a nice good look at what you are on the inside, good, bad, and ugly. And then we're going to put all that back together. And you're going to be able to walk around with confidence and know what's going on inside. Those are the ones that have the highest success rate. Because one of the things I teach is Christians dropping the fig leaf. And that's basically becoming fully exposed and known and being 100% real.
Mm-hmm.
And that fires me up, because most people that really go far are the ones that have a really heightened self-awareness. They know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
They know what they're supposed to do. They know how they're supposed to do it. They know why they're doing it. And they don't walk around with a whole lot of guessing and letting life happen to them. They happen to life.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm really passionate about is, helping people that are coming up the line now.
Yeah, it's
helping them get there quicker.
And I love how you've been able to, and we keep talking about art. I don't mean to even pigeonhole you there. That's because fine. You do mentor just people in businesses or helping with strategy or churches. And you've worked with us, you've worked with our Calvary Church leadership and helping us drop the fig leaf between each other. It's been a really great process, and just love what you've done with us. And so it does, what you do translates to a lot more than obviously just art.
Oh, dude, thank you, man.
Yeah,
for sure. I think sometimes when we're talking about the enemies that we face, you're talking about the three enemies, sometimes our posture towards those things are to go on the defensive. Mm-hmm. Also knowing you and even just following social media, there's a lot of things you're doing on the offensive to be building up your marriage, your family, your kids, your relationship with them. Mm. What are some of those things that you're doing like that are pushing back, and it's just the investment, it's the cultivating those relationships?
It's really interesting because Matthew 6:33, seek first my kingdom and righteousness and everything else will be added unto you. Yeah. My version of that is, hey, God saying this, hey, Noah, if you make me your number one, if you make my priorities your priorities, I'll fill in all the blanks. Mm-hmm. So here's what that says to most leaders or men. If I do that, everything's going to go to crud really quick. Hmm. I'm going to lose my position at work. I'm going to lose money, which means I'm not going to be able to provide. That means we're not going to be able to live where we live. That means I'm not going to be able to buy the things I want to be able to buy. My wife's not going to be able to have what she has. And if she's unhappy, then I'm really, really miserable. And so it kind of, we do this thing in our head. And the Lord goes, wait a minute. Seek me first. I'll take care of everything else. My offensive, proactive measures with Chantel and the kids is we made a lot of really crazy decisions to do that, like Chantel retiring, her homeschooling. Every decision that we've made makes zero sense in the world's economy. Mm-hmm. But example, date night every week. That's cost a lot of money. So does marriage counseling.
Right.
So pick where you want to spend. You want to go to a nice meal and take your wife out and be intentional and ask her about what's going on in her world. And I just think as men, we have no business going out trying to change the world or even changing our church or changing our community if the ministry under our home is just in shambles. So that means best days with the kids, which are super important. There's a great way, if you want to know how well you're doing, just imagine inviting all your friends over to hang out with your family at the table and you're not there, but they get to ask your family for a report card.
That's good.
And that
you first.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that goes on everything. Like, how's he doing? Is he here? And when he's here, is he here? Is he engaged? Is he exciting? Is he kick the dog syndrome? Is he always mad? Is he short? Is he a long fuse, but a huge bomb? All of these things. So I just know the battle that we're in and the stakes and what I'm asking God for comes with, believers hate to hear what I'm about to say. The results that I want and the things I'm asking God to do and the things that I'm going after, he looks down and says, really? Prove it. Because what you want comes with prerequisites. A leader like that doesn't do that. Mm-hmm. A leader like that doesn't act like that. Doesn't have that behavior. Doesn't treat people like that. So there's a lot of, you're asking for all this? Right. You want to, it's the equivalent of like a kid coming up to say, hey, I need a job. And I'm going to go to the grocery store. And you walk right up to the manager and go, hey, I want to be regional manager.
Right.
It's like, dude, have you boxed a grocery? Have you gone outside and like grabbed things? It's like, so I believe a lot of builders do that, or believers do that. They just kind of show up and like, Lord, you're my bellman. Do this, this, and this. You're the all creator. I'm just going to kick it. And I want an amazing life.
Mm-hmm. With no discipline for the purpose of godliness.
So the disciplines, though, start with like, it's not outside in my career and crush it there, which is what the world advertises, because they say, if you do that, then your wife's going to be stoked. Trust me, I've had so many meals with wives that could would give up all of the money in the lifestyle so that they could just be with their husband.
Mm-hmm.
And so the proactiveness is your wife's heart, your spouse's heart. I teach a thing where it just says, treat your spouse as your number one client. And that came from an actual meeting in a car where a woman was saying, she's like, I'm not my husband's number one client.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, ooh, that's good. You know, I'm sorry that you're dealing with that, but that's a great topic.
Can I use that?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Go ahead.
No, it's just, I think just a few minutes left.
Yeah.
But I was just want to ask something a little lighter. So
why is this heavy?
You know, no.
I'm secretly crying over here.
I know. I'm pulling it together, but
texting
it's good.
My wife, let's go on a date.
Yeah.
Yeah. Taking a lot of notes, but it is good. But just, I just can't help. I was thinking about Comic-Con. You talked about comic book conventions and all that, you know,
yeah.
How do you do at a comic book convention? You seem a little too tall and a little too cool.
Yeah. Well, let's put it this way. There's enough dudes around there like that make up for anything I'm not doing.
Are you saying that that's my jam? I should be going there? No.
I feel like it's right up your wheelhouse, buddy.
Okay. All right.
Although I'm a big reader of a lot of weird geeky stuff. So
yeah,
I get it.
It's funny, man, because that whole world is, you know, people are like, oh, it's so dark. Well, of course, everything's dark. We're on enemy territory, man. It's not like this place is supposed to be amazing. But it's, you know, you're walking into the top pop culture influence, like, realm of the world, you know, like what happens there's like the epicenter and the ripples of everything that's created there and all that. But then you have everybody that just comes together and nerds out and guys that are wearing clothes that are definitely not appropriate for men to be wearing, you know, the size that they are and all that. So yeah, you're seeing lots of crazy stuff. We actually play games at the show to, like, you know, the most random things that you'll see, characters, people are dressed up with certain characters, but it, you know, what's amazing about it though, we've been doing that show since 1996.
Yeah.
Long time.
That is a long time.
And so you get to see people, like, kids grow up and families come by.
True.
So you're seeing these routine, like, you're seeing these return people. But the one of the most special things about it is, like, just how much they say that the art, they're like, this is the best stuff in the whole place. Like, so you hear that.
Mm.
But you'll hear other words like, hey, it's just really nice that this art has, like, it's good. It's, like, good for our family.
Mm-hmm.
And they're buying a bunch of pieces because the parents are into it as well. But I got some friends in that world that are top of the game comic book artists that are just absolutely phenomenal. I'm just privileged and honored to, like, do life with them, you know, collaborate with them. We've done projects together, do Disney work together, which has been great. But yeah, that's an incredible world. You got to go in there with the right perspective. You got to have the right mindset when you walk in an environment like that, because otherwise you'll just get clobbered. Yeah, you just be like mental overload.
Can I ask one more?
Yeah, please. Yeah, sure.
Dude, I got time, like 5 more minutes. No, I'm just kidding.
Hopes and dreams. You've been coming to Calvary since you're 13 years old.
Yeah.
Hopes and dreams for this place.
Hopes and dreams for Calvary.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, that's another podcast.
we'll have you back for the extended version on that one.
Man, I just see this as being such an incredible epicenter for launching people out, bringing, you know, cultivating amazing leaders. I mean, if you look at its track record, and that's something that should be done at some point, is, like, literally just us going through this list of, look what's come out of this place. Like, this person was here, now look at where they're at, you know.
Right. Legacy.
Legacy is just insane.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny because I'm talking to churches, I'm running into people all over the world. Like, next week I'll be in, you know, 2 days ago I was up in Reading, I'll be in the opposite side of the country tomorrow or the next day in Florida, Walt Disney World, right? And as I'm talking with people and I say, oh, you know, your church, like, oh yeah, we have our church. Oh yeah, how old is it? It's like, it's a year and a half. I'm like, my church is nearly 90, you know?
Exactly.
So it's crazy because people are like, how is that possible?
Right.
You know, because it's kind of this hipster thing of like, oh, we're doing a church pop-up for 3 years and then we're going to close it down and go start a new one, you know, rebrand it and like, good grief. But there's legs to Calvary. There's a serious ripple effect of Calvary launching and cultivating insane leaders. You know, I love the fact this campus, how big it is and how it can be leveraged.
Mm-hmm.
I love its location in Orange County, centrally located in all of when you look at where everybody else is. The heart, I love the fact that we have old and young. We might be the most spread that I know of in Orange County.
Absolutely.
In terms of the spectrum of age. I love also the diversity of all of the languages that are, it's just incredible. So there's so many pros, but it's not like, oh, I want to see this, brand new buildings and crazy vision in terms of like, you know, bigger coffee shop, anything like that. I mean, those are all great things, but that's not really going to change what Calvary's
DNA
and right. what it's known for. And that's what I really pride on. I'm like, at the end of the day, what's the net effects and the return on investment? So it's a brutal thing I do with myself is as a result of my efforts this year, how many people will be standing in eternity as a result of my efforts?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like, I'm thinking about that on New Year's Eve. I got to look over the shoulder and think, how much has that happened? But I look at it as for Calvary. I look at it for any church. I kind of run it through that filter. It's like, great, buildings, great, programs, great, life groups, great, rad, 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 rad. But at the end of the day, what's God's ROI?
Yeah.
And God's going to go, that's all awesome. You guys were really busy. But at the end of the day, how many people are going to be in eternity as a result of all this?
Yeah.
Because that's all he's going to do to measure it on. And so I look at all the initiatives, the outreach, the reach, the love for the community. Those are all awesome things. But at the end of the day, I'm really stoked that there is an ROI. It's measurable. There's numbers. The missions is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I'm proud of that. So when I'm out and about and people are kind of, hey, here's what we got going on. I'm like, oh, that's rad. But I'm so proud to say what we output and what our net ROI is pretty awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. And that's the whole each one reach one. That's why we're really pursuing that vision. Cause that's, I agree. It's the ROI that we're going for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. This is awesome. I'm excited for people to get to know you a little bit more, Noah. And
thanks, man.
All our, we've got a lot of crazy Disney people, so they can go into the galleries and look for your artwork in there. Yes. They can find you online. What's the best place to look for your stuff online?
So Noah Elias. So it's NOAH and then ELIAS.net, NoahElias.net. That's kind of like the main hub.
Okay.
So all of our teachings on there and our books are on there and workshop and, Disney stuff, everything's on that one little hub, and so you can decide to go from there.
Perfect. Cool. I'd love for people to check that out at noahelias.net. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you.
Thanks again for joining us on the Calvary Life Podcast. If you enjoyed our show this week, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. If you want to learn more about Calvary Church or share any of your thoughts, check us out on our website at calvarylife.org or find us on one of our social media accounts. We're on Instagram at Calvary_Church, Facebook at Calvary Church of Santa Ana, and Twitter at Calvary Life.